Were any of your formative crushes cartoon characters? Are any of your current crushes cartoon characters? If so, you're in company. I'm comedy writer and 41-year-old child Gabby Hutchinson-Crouch, and I've been crushing on cartoons since Philip Schofield had brown hair. I'd like to find out why they're so appealing with the help of some funny guests who are here for a chat about the animated characters that make them float up into the air as if they just smelled a delicious pie. Will we find out something about early crushes, pop culture and sexuality, or will we just rattle on about anime dads with their tops off? Whatever we do, I hope it'll help you see that that idle thought you keep getting about what a dirty little whore Ned Flanders would be if he just let it all go is absolutely fine. Welcome to Curiously Drawn. With me this episode is an author of funny fantasy books for children, including The Dragon in the Library, Otherland, and Loki, A Bad God's Guide to Being Good. Because listen, Disney, you can't actually trademark a Bronze Age Nordic deity. She and I met at another author's book launch after she had cycled through the snow to get there and I'd got lost on the way. If one of us had dropped a stack of papers, it would have been the ultimate rom-com meet-cute. It's Louise Stowell. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello, thanks for having me on.
Hello, let's just hello. Hello, thank you for coming on.
Excellent, I'm very excited. This feels like something we should be recording late at night with a lot of wine. But
I know we're not. We're recording it stupidly early with coffee. I've got coffee. Have you got coffee?
I've got coffee, yeah. I've got, actually got a coffee with a homemade Loki mug with the, my Loki on.
With
that
Marvel
can't see before because it's my Loki.
What does your Loki look like? Because sometimes Loki's a redhead and...
So he started off, well, basically I draw him black and white, so you can't tell.
Sure. But,
he started off with what looks like white hair, I guess blonde. Yeah, he was supposed to have red hair because that's what he has in the myths.
In Norse canon.
In Norse canon. However, my designer said that's not going to stand out enough. So
sure.
He ends up with black hair and basically looks a bit like a cross between Dennis the Menace and Beavis and Butthead.
I think that's a really good look for Loki.
I think so, yeah. And he's currently in the body of a child, and that's
sure.
not his real body. So as an adult, he looks a bit more like kind of scrawny Tom Ellis with a beard
right.
and horns. I think I was possibly watching Lucifer while I was drawing him. but yeah, boy Loki is, you know, like skinny legs and just not, you know,
well, that's Loki. That's just Loki for you. You know, he's got a zillion different forms.
Exactly. Drawing him as a horse was quite fun. Sorry, yeah.
Yes, drawing him as a sexy lady horse in Norse canon,
isn't he?
I love that about him. I love that he's just like a mum to his dad's horse.
Yep.
Right there, goes dad.
Odinus,
oh no, he's not, is he? In the MCU.
In the MCU,
whenever Odin's like on, is it Sleipnir? His horse son? He's like, well, there goes dad. Riding the sun into battle. Careful, son.
Yeah,
go on, then. Ride your grandson.
Yeah. Like, I get why the Norse people thought that, you know, eight legs makes it sound really fast, but I just think of them tripping all the time.
I know, like a foal would just be, like, all over the place.
Oh, slip me a foal. Now I've got to do
Loki's
that.
Loki's clumsy son. Well, interestingly, we're going to go from talking about a Norse god of mischief to another mythological being with your first choice for your sexy cartoon characters. So your first choice is an ancient elf queen who can see into the minds of others. And if you're a very lucky dwarf, she'll give you three strands of her hair. Mm-hmm. You might know her as Kate Blanchett as seen through a thick smear of Vaseline, but we're talking about a slightly wonkily animated version voiced by Mrs. Meldrew. It's Galadriel from the 1978 animated movie of The Lord of the Rings.
Yes.
Yes.
Lord of the Swing.
Lord of the Swing.
So this is obviously a childhood one. I wasn't alive. Well, no, I was. I was born the year the film, 1978, the year the film came out, but I didn't see it till much later.
Sure.
So, I mean, I actually think I was probably about four when I first saw it. Because apparently I was small enough to hide under the chair when I got scared of the Black Riders.
Oh.
But then I watched it many, many times in the, whatever, 30 years before the next film came out. and basically she looks a bit like Cindy, But like, if Cindy was all powerful and potentially evil.
Yeah, she's funny looking, isn't it? It's been ages since. So I did watch the Ralph Bakshi, is it? Ralph Bakshi, yeah. Lord of the Rings. I did watch it after the... So that my introduction to the Lord of the Rings was the Peter Jackson movie. Mm-hmm. The first one, which I think I went in cold, not knowing what it, people had said, oh, the special effects are really good, go and see it. And I was like, I actually really like this. I like the story. So yeah, then I sort of got really into it, and I did watch the cartoon version in between Christmas movies. And yeah, so as far as I, so even that, oh God, that was a while ago. So I keep thinking, oh yeah, 2001, that was really recent. No, yeah, that was 20 years ago. Jesus, yeah. Wept. So as far as I remember, the film is kind of the Fellowship of the Ring and then the first half of the Two Towers, and then it just stops.
And I don't know if it, I mean, honestly, I've never really looked into the background of it, because like when you're a kid, I don't know, well, I wasn't that kind of kid where I would look up the production details, and also there wasn't the internet, so I'm not sure how I would have done. But yeah, so I didn't really know why, but I just knew I was obsessed with it, and I was generally very into Lord of the Rings, so I think I watched this film first, and then once I had, I don't know, some dramatic childhood in illness like measles, but maybe it was chickenpox, and my dad basically told me the story of Lord of the Rings, like the whole thing, while I was sick in bed for however two weeks. And then I read it, and then I listened to the audio play, and like the audio play is actually the best version out of all of them. But obviously it doesn't have Carty and Galadriel, so that's a downside.
I love a good audio play.
It's all star. Like, it's got Bill Nighy as Sam. It's got Ian Holm as Frodo. Michael Horden as Gandalf. I forget who else, but like, honestly, it's just all the stars.
That's the wonderful thing about audio dramas. You know, I work in radio quite a bit, and with audio drama, you can get really big stars because they're just going in for an afternoon.
Yeah.
Play a really good part. It's like, yeah, fair enough. This isn't going to take much out of my schedule. I'll come in and play here, is it?
And you don't have to do your hair or anything.
Exactly. You can just schlub up.
Because for Otherland, one of my books, I had Gemma Whelan did the audio.
Oh, sweet.
Basically, because for children's audio, it's only, you know, like, an hour or so.
Yeah. I mean,
it really is quite short. I think something like 10,000 words is an hour, something like that.
Right.
So mine's only 45,000 words, so you know.
My introduction to John Wyndham was in a really amazing audio play of The Chrysalis, which shat me up. I was so scared.
John Wyndham is like scarring of childhoods, but amazing.
Yeah.
I remember the when I first, because I think I first listened to Day of the Triffids rather than reading it.
Ooh.
And there's a bit at the start, which is obviously not very good for children, where someone,
in the hospital. In the hospital.
Well, someone that doesn't want to be in that world anymore.
Yes.
And he's saying, got to get drunk, got to get much drunker. And it's like the most sinister thing.
Yeah.
But also it's meant that I spent quite a lot of years not looking at the sky when there were comets, because I knew I was covering that.
I still don't watch the Perseids. Oh,
just in case.
Just in case. Yeah, no, my introduction to it was watching the 1981 drama, which is fucking terrifying. The whole first episode, it's only six episodes, the whole first episode is him in the hospital, and it's just, it's horrific.
Yeah,
it's so scary. Really. Anyway,
and then they made 28 Days Later, and that was basically the same story.
It was. They and Shaun of the Dead, both 28 Days Later and Shaun of the Dead, both have like shot for shot copies of it. Anyway, we've gone miles off topic.
We've gone off. So basically, one of the things I want to say about Galadriel the Beautiful is she's got this rainbow ring. Like, basically, when the ring goes, you know, when she's like, oh, look, my ring is magic. Nenya, the Ring of Adamant, sort of throws out this rainbow. And I think that very much appeal to like queer tiny me. It was obviously all subconscious, because like at that age you don't know. But she was just like that idea of this like perfectly powerful but also kind of sinister woman. I guess it's like the hot teacher who you know they're in charge and they could probably end you, but also they're hot.
I mean, as far as I remember, it didn't, the cartoon of it had even fewer women in it than the film.
The film basically had to add all that, though, because that's not I mean, he is like, Tolkien was, I guess, homosocial, I'd go with, you know, like, yeah, he just was into dudes in a social context.
Yeah, and he was one of those pipe smoking academic types. Yeah, who was like jolly good chaps.
But it's interesting because I just think about my life and I think about how often, like, I can go for weeks without hanging out with a man. So I worked in publishing for years, and obviously, yes, there's the odd man, but like in children's publishing, there's like one man per office. And you always, I mean, there's a kind of expression, hot for publishing, which is basically a straight man gets to be like 10 times hotter when he's in the publishing office. It's amazing. It's like, honestly, like, men go into publishing if you want to, I don't know, if your career goal is to be lusted after, then go for it. Though, interestingly, I think because my author circle overlaps with comic circles, and yes, that's just chock full of straight men. So actually, there are some straight men in my life, and they love comics.
Yay. So the elves in this movie, I took a look at, I gave myself a little refresher with some of the clips. The elves in it do look odd because they're quite, a lot of the drawings are kind of sort of very realistic. I think in some of them they did the thing where they film people and then they sort of animate over the filming.
Yeah, so for like the baddies, especially in the battle scenes, which is terrifying. Mm. Like the Black Riders, I was so disappointed with the Black Riders in the Peter Jackson version because they were nowhere near as scary as the cartoon.
Sure.
And I appreciate that might have been because I was like 21 versus 4, but I still genuinely think the ones in the Ralph Bakshi are just so unsettling.
Yeah.
But then the elves are kind of hyper cartoony. So
they are, aren't they? They've got those massive eyes. Yeah. And especially Galadriel's got, as you say, she does look like a Cindy because her eyes are huge. Yeah. And they've got this sort of light. It's there's a sort of cat-like and sort of uncanny valley stuff,
yeah,
to them.
Yeah.
They're kind of hyper realistic, but they're also kind of not. They've got really high eyebrows. in the clips I saw, Galadriel and Legolas just look constantly surprised.
Yeah.
What? You're taking the ring to where?
Legolas. Interestingly, I was kind of choosing between Galadriel and Legolas because both. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, Legolas is so androgynous looking in that. Yeah. I mean, I suppose Legolas is kind
he's
of
he's got that David Bowie in Labyrinth vibe.
Yeah, but, he does.
It's the tights. Is there exactly the same pair of tights as David Bowie? I've just Googled the picture to remind myself, and they are.
Yeah.
Except without the area.
But yeah, she's also, Galadriel is also voiced by Annette Crosby, a.k.a. Mrs. Meldrew.
I will give you the One Ring, if you ask for it. It's too great a matter for me.
And I came to test your heart. You will give me the great ring freely, and in place of the Dark Lord, you will set up a queen. And I shall not be evil, but beautiful and terrible as the morning and the night, stronger than the foundations of the earth. All shall love me and despair. I pass the test. I will diminish and go into the west and remain Galadriel.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, she also did a really good job of voicing Granny Weatherwax in the Cosgrove Hall Discworld cartoon. So, you know, maybe she's just like the go-to for like these incredibly cool, powerful, magical women in like slightly wonky cartoons. It's like, we don't have much budget to animate this woman. What are we going to do to bring her to life?
Annette
Get
Crosby.
In Annette Crosby.
Like, it's a very specific typecasting there. I enjoy that.
Yeah, and then, yeah, but she'll be best known as, like, a grumpy man's even grumpier wife.
Yeah.
It's a living.
It is.
Well, speaking about making a living in a weird kind of a way, I'm going to move on to your second choice. And now, your second choice is somebody I don't really know about. But she is a telepathic law enforcer in a dystopian post-apocalyptic megalopolis. Like her namesake, she can see the future, and the future's horrible. It's Judge Cassandra Anderson from 2000 AD's Judge Dredd comics.
Indeed, yes.
Indeed.
So she is... So just for a bit of context for anyone that doesn't have a 2000 AD background. So 2000 AD was the comic I read growing up, all through the 80s. Not so much in the 90s. I think I just got distracted by other things. But in one of the strips, there's a character called Judge Dredd, who's probably more familiar, who is, yes, basically like a horrible fascist, but he's the main character. And that's always been quite an interesting tension. Basically, it is a dystopia. And you're kind of also supposed to be on his side, which is, it's just complicated, I think. And basically, Judge Anderson is basically psychic, which in a world where like basically everyone's in constant like psychic pain is quite hard. So it's kind of exploring, I suppose, the like more inner life of what it means to be a law enforcer in a world where you're basically the bad guys, but also everyone else is the bad guys. And so I guess she's kind of the more human side of things. But I think the crush origin is partly the uniform, but also it's kind of like, it's sort of a leotard, but with, I mean, they all have the same. It's not like a sexist thing. The men have it too. Like very tight. And then a big eagle on one shoulder and kind of shoulder pad on the other. And then their badge on the chest, which is very distinctive. And then that has kind of a chain to it. It's pretty cool.
It's sort of a Gestapo leotard.
or full body leotard. I don't know what you call it. It's probably got that name. But, and so anyway, but basically she's like the quippy one. So Judge Dredd is very deadpan. Like he's a clone. He's very, I mean, just kind
he's
of
all chin,
stoic.
Isn't he? All I know he's all about chin. Judge Dredd, he's a talking chin.
He's all chin. He doesn't take his helmet off. So you can't really fancy Judge Dredd because people fancy the Mandalorian, which I find very confusing because you've never seen his face. But anyway, I can't fancy someone if I haven't seen their face.
I've been told that I would fancy the Mandalorian if I bothered to watch the Mandalorian because I've got a thing about tired dads. Right.
Are you a Ted Lasso person then?
I haven't seen Ted Lasso either.
You're missing out on
missing out on all this tired dad energy.
yeah, no. Cassandra Anderson, the opposite of a tired dad. She's quite perky and obviously not a dad. So basically, judges are also celibate in theory. I mean,
they're like monks.
Practice. So basically, I've got it's kind of the priest thing, which is
bag.
We know where that goes. She's the Neil priest, if you know what I mean. I think there's something about that kind of immense self control and repression, which probably says a lot about me. But she's definitely got like she's got the feelings. There's definitely like shots of her crying and stuff. Like also shots of her being completely badass. So there's these evil characters called the Dark Judges who are basically judges from, I think they're from another dimension. I can't remember where they came from exactly. And basically they think that the crime is life, the sentence is death. So they basically go around killing everyone because all crimes are committed by humans, living humans. So if you kill them, there's no crime. So they're kind of a twisted, I mean, they're sort of like, I guess, fascism taken to a very far extreme.
Yeah.
Not that fascism,
fascism is already quite
anyway,
extreme.
But taking to a logical conclusion, perhaps.
Yeah, you just kill everybody.
The order is kill everyone.
Yeah.
So anyway, but she's like the one person that can kind of fight them, which is always, I always like that, you know, that kind of like the one person who has the power to fight them. Not in a chosen one way, because that's annoying, but like they just happen to have some weird skill. And so she can like trap them psychically.
I was gonna say so in a different podcast that I've in a different episode of this that I've done another person chose two female characters who were both psychic from the 80s. I was wondering, this is another psychic woman, and it does feel like it is a kind of quite a gendered trope that, and that's not without even bringing in like Deanna Troi, who's like the ultimate 80s psychic badass.
I've not really thought about that. That's really interesting because I think I've never been particularly into the X-Men, but I feel like Jean Grey, if I'm going to say an X-Men, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and Psylocke, who we ended up talking about, who is also Super Psylocke, and Scarlet Witch. There's loads of them.
Yeah, so I don't know what it is. I really can't identify why it is. It's a particular kind of presence, I think. They're very there with you. You know, like they see you because they literally can read your mind.
Yeah.
So I think in a way it's kind of I wonder if you think they'd make you feel special, maybe? I don't know.
It is a very, I mean, it's a very cool superpower to give all these female characters. And I don't know whether it's sort of adding to their strength in like a non-physical way, because maybe, like the men are kind of buff and they've got the sort of raw physical strength. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but it was a real thing, especially like in the 80s and 90s to go like, and she's psychic.
Yeah. Well, actually, I mean, Galadriel's basically psychic, so...
She is, isn't she? She's got the thing where she can see into your mind. And she's from like the 20s? When was Lord of the Rings written? 1910s?
He wrote it over a really long time. I think he started in about the 30s, but I can't remember.
Okay.
So, I mean, she's an interesting one in terms of the psychic and future thing, I think. I think for me that, because her visions don't necessarily come true, it depends on what you do. She's got that kind of almost like trickster vibe, you know, like the sort of be careful what you wish for. Not trustworthy. It's not like this is the future, I've done a prophecy. It's like this might be the future, I'm not going to tell you. And I think that kind of element, the tricksy element, is very appealing.
That is, well, I mean, you've written a whole book about a trickster god, so. I do have bit of trivia I found about her, which there is an urban myth that she was based on Debbie Harry.
Judge Anderson.
Yeah. But this is wrong. But the alleged truth behind Judge Anderson's design is much, much worse. Right. The alleged truth is that 2000 AD's former editor, Kelvin Gosnell, recounted that the comic's assistant editor, Deirdre Vine, at the time, was the inspiration for the character, having been surreptitiously photographed across the office. And then he gave the photo to Bolland, who was told to make Anderson look like that. It's like, you guys,
I feel wrong now.
you could just ask. I'm sure that if you went up to someone and went, I like your vibe, can we just kind of use, would you, you know.
If you pose for this.
Would you mind if we just if you'd like post, or we just like used some of your sort of aesthetic looks? And if I was working in comics, I'd be like, yeah, that's really cool, what a lovely idea, thank you. But instead they're just like sneakily, you're not James Bond, lads, just like, ask.
That's an okay thing to do with pictures of dogs, you know, like I do pictures of dogs.
Well, it's because you can't ask a dog, would you like to
ask a dog. You can ask their owner, but you know. But sometimes I'm waiting for someone and I might take a photo of a dog. I wouldn't put it online because I didn't ask. But just to show my wife or something. But when it's a human being, I just...
Who you work with. It's a colleague. Like, lads, just ask.
I hope that was in some way a made-up story, and actually...
I hope so.
Let's say it was all wholesome.
It's alleged, but yeah. Guys, don't go around boasting about that.
They'd be desperately correcting the Wikipedia entry after that.
Anyway, speaking of morally grey characters, let's move on to choice number three. So choice number three is the foul-mouthed, cynical, occult detective Scouser. At odds with both heaven and hell, he's a morally grey, charismatic, problematic Viking chain-smoking through the dark magic of London's criminal underworld. He's based on the musician Sting, and like Sting, he pops up everywhere. It's John Constantine from loads of properties, including, especially in this case, Hellblazer. So yet again, this is a character I don't know that much about, even though he's absolutely bloody everywhere, because I'm not really much of a comics reader. So you are going to have to talk me through this character, who is apparently everywhere. He's one of these characters, but with some of the characters that I don't know, it's a bit tricksy sort of looking them up because there's not much information about them. With this one, it was like, oh my god, there's all the information about this character. This is going to take me forever. So why don't you talk me through John Constantine and what you like about him?
Well, let me talk you through my introduction to John Constantine, because I think that was my journey. So I came to him first through the Books of Magic, which was a Neil Gaiman thing, which was about a boy wizard. So it was boy wizard before Harry Potter, who looked quite a lot like Harry Potter and had an owl, but was much more awesome than Harry Potter, called Tim. Anyway, and Tim the wizard had basically a bunch of older wizards helping him, and one of those wizards was John Constantine. So basically I met John Constantine as this originally, like, I guess almost Merlin figure, but if Merlin smoked and was a Scouser, and is, like, you know, helping the young wizard. Let's say Arthur's a wizard in this scenario. And so he was basically quite mysterious and shadowy, and I was like, interesting, let's see where that goes. And then I think I read the Swamp Thing version. So again, he's being a helper character, he's not his own main character. And there's something very interesting about those, and I think it's what drew me to Loki as a writer, was, like, Loki's often the side character. And then so when I got to Hellblazer, it's like, what happens when the side character becomes a main character? And actually it was done amazingly well, because I think sometimes you're like, actually, once the side character becomes main, you're like, you're boring now, you're just a hero.
Yeah.
Whereas they did not make him a hero in any way. He is still a terrible person. Or, well, terrible person with good moments, but I think it's that kind of, like, any good moment is always feels a bit reluctantly good, and he's also very convinced of his own badness, which I enjoy. I think it was probably the Scouse thing originally, because my family's from Liverpool, so I always find a Scouse accent kind of reassuring. Obviously in a comic no one has a Scouse accent, but still I knew, and it's sort of like there's a home element to it, you know. But honestly, I think it was the coat. he's got a trench coat, and it was the 90s, what can I do, you know? It's because I think I read the Books of Magic, because the Books of Magic was very early 90s, so like 1991, so that's when I first met him. And then I kind of started reading through Hellblazer. And I think it's sort of interesting with the smoking. So he basically does make smoking look cool. I mean, I was never very interested in smoking myself, but it was interesting. He just did it as an art form, and I really appreciated that art form. And I think it's like, there's something about the kind of self-conscious being cool person who, you know, is also a massive dork that is really appealing. Like, he's not actually cool, he's a mess. Like, he's not suave in any way, he's just always messing everything up, he's like a disaster. And I think I quite like disasters as well.
Disaster zone is
the hot mess, you know.
I love a hot mess.
I like, I know this is not a cartoon character, but Rebecca Bunch in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend.
I love her.
She's like the ultimate hot mess. And I was realizing, actually, hot mess female characters tend not to be cartoons. Don't know why. Apart from Crazy Jane in Doom Patrol, but she's like, I don't know, probably beyond mess, because she's.
I'm trying to think of any cartoon hot messes. I'm sure cartoon female hot messes. I'm sure I can. Ooh,
I know. In things, basically, all the ones I picked were all formative ones. I didn't go for anyone more recent. In Lower Decks, what she called, the main character.
Yes, well, we're doing about her in a different podcast.
Anyway, she's a hot mess. I can never remember anyone's name in that show.
Beckett Mariner.
Beckett Mariner, that's it. Yeah, she's, like, obviously she's competent, but she's also a fuck. Am I allowed to swear on this podcast?
Yeah, it's fine.
Okay. Kids, don't listen to this podcast.
I mean, yeah, no, kids, don't listen to this podcast. It's all adults ruining the stuff that you like.
but Constantine is a proper hot mess. And I think, I remember when they made the Keanu Reeves film, and I was really annoyed because they made him too cool.
I was about to say, I haven't seen the Keanu film, but I listened to he doesn't have British accent, does he? He's just like...
He doesn't, but it does have Tilda Swinton as Gabriel, and that was good.
You judging me now, John?
Betrayal, murder, genocide. Call me provincial.
I'm simply seeking to inspire mankind to all that was in heaven.
By handing Earth over to the son of the devil...
Like, yeah, that's
basically
hot.
just Google her in that. You don't need to watch the whole film.
I mean, Tilda Swinton in any, like, androgynous in anything generally, but especially, like, in androgynous roles, you're like, you can be any gender you like. Just get in my face.
But Constantine, I think, is an interesting one, because it's also basically, as a teenager, I wanted to be him. And there's always that borderline between wannabe versus fancy, which I
know. I mean, that's such hashtag relatable bi problems. with so many like really cool, especially female characters, like, do I want to be you, or do I want to kiss you, or do I want to do both, or I don't know. I don't know.
I wish you didn't have it with female characters as much.
Really?
It was always quite clear that I you know, fancy women rather than wants to be with them. I think basically because I possibly fancy women who are nothing like me, so it's not quite the same.
Oh, right. Vibe. Yeah. And he's and he is a canon bi, I do believe.
He definitely is.
I'm going to put a little canon bi klaxon whenever we get the canon bi on the show.
Awooga.
An awooga.
See, on the Legends of Tomorrow, he hooks up with another about canon bi, which was, you know, great.
I was going to say that because he was like, what he so he started off in DC in Swamp Thing, co-created.
He's
by
always been Alan DC.
Moore. Yeah, but didn't he move on to like Vertigo, which is like a DC sort of side.
But yes,
but he wasn't allowed in proper in like the normal DC proper.
No, not until recently, where he's been in more normal DC. But I think basically once DC went all grimdark, they haven't got much of an excuse to keep him out.
Because wasn't Vertigo like their grimdark? And then
the thing with Vertigo that made it not like that is it was funny. Like Hellblazer is actually really funny, you know, like, and it's just quirky as well. Like his best mate's a taxi driver. It's got all these little kind of almost Marvel-like realistic details. You know, people have real lives in Vertigo. It's not just like, I am standing on the top of a building.
And brood in the rain.
Like, he definitely broods in the rain, but he then has to go to the laundrette. You know what I mean? Like,
I love that. Because I'm not a big comics reader, but I do really like the TV shows that I've seen that are based on Vertigo property. So I loved Preacher, and I loved iZombie, and they both come from Vertigo comics. Mm. So it's like clearly this is, if I were to start reading it, it would almost certainly be my sort of thing. It's just that I haven't. Oh yeah, and wasn't there was a TV show of Legends of Tomorrow? Is that what?
That's what I was talking about, yeah.
All right, cool.
Oh my God, watch it immediately. It's just so much fun. It's like the opposite of Grimdark. It's basically a cartoon, but it's not a cartoon.
And Den of just, Geek like, described it as the superhero show equivalent to Parks and Rec.
It is, yeah. It's just basically, it's a workplace comedy about incompetent people attempting to save the world, but kind of messing it up. It's got unicorns, it's got hippie, like they travel to like... Woodstock, you know, it's got everything. It's just like I think in a way it sort of did all the time travel stuff that I wanted the Loki show to do, but didn't really get around to it. It's just like time travel hijinks with bisexual fun.
That does sound like my cup of tea. I might have to go on.
The first series isn't as good, but it's also, I mean, it's also gay fun as well. It's not just bisexuals. It's got I can't remember, it's called Captain Freeze or something. The guy that's played by Wentworth Miller.
I know hardly anything about DC.
Wentworth Miller was in Buffy once. He was in the episode of... actually, he's probably more famous from Prison Break than one Buffy episode, but he was in Go Fish.
Oh, okay. Well, I have got one more question for you, Louis.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, if I were to produce a magic wand that gave me the power to make one of your choices... flesh and blood and bring them from the page and make them 3D and put them in the real world, whom would you choose and would you pursue that person in real life?
Interesting. So I'm going to cheat because my characters are generally trickster types, so I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to pick someone not on my list because I had a brainwave after I submitted my choices to you. I'm going to bring to life Lucy from The Wicked and the Divine, who is basically Lucifer embodied as a woman and in a white suit. I'll have to send you a picture.
Yes, do, because I don't know this person.
I would not go near her in real life because she's literally the devil. However, she is amazing and kind of like absolute catnip.
You'd bring the devil into the world.
I'd bring the devil into the world.
Instead of a chain-smoking scouser.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, John Constantine, like, he'd just have really yellow teeth and stuff.
He'd be like
the joy of a cartoon is you can't see any of that. So I'm just going to cheat. But if I had to pick out one of my picks, I would go with Galadriel. Basically, because I want to see the bit where she diminishes and goes into the West.
Yes.
And remains Galadriel. Because in that moment, I just picture it as basically Go West, the song.
Go West, there basically, are elves.
Galadriel gone wild. Because when she says diminish, I just think go degenerate. Like, she's not got any responsibilities anymore. She's going on a road trip through America, and we just go together.
Well, enjoy your road trip in America with a diminished collateral. Before you go, besides your Loki book, which we have mentioned, is there anything else you'd like to give a shout out about?
My book, Otherland, which actually has a villain who is very loosely based on Galadriel if she was mixed with David Bowie from Labyrinth. And if she was completely, like, absolute chaos. She's the fairy queen in this book, Otherland, and she's kind of... So in the book, the main character, Myra, has kind of a crush on her, like Sarah has on Jareth Labyrinth. But she's kind of even more dangerous than Jareth because she's got no logic. She just does what she wants. Please buy Otherland for your children. But I swear, it's totally PG. It's just,
it
kind of channels that. It's you know, an adventure story with a slightly kind of trippy vibe.
Cool.
And jokes.
Yay, jokes. Louis, thank you ever so much.
Excellent. Thank you.
Huge thanks to Louis Stahl there. I'm Gabby Hutchinson Crouch. For more credits and details, see @curiously_drawn on Twitter.